Hi, and welcome to The Cutaneous Connection, a podcast from the staff at Dermatology Times, aiming to provide you with the latest news in dermatology, exclusive interviews with leading experts, and a glimpse at what goes on behind the scenes of clinical trials, research, and innovation. I'm your host, Lauren Buchanan. In today's episode, Dr. Christopher Bunick of Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut, explains how data currently available can help dermatology clinicians decide personalized treatment options for patients with atopic dermatitis.
So what are the factors that we have to take into account when we think about treating patients with atopic dermatitis? The atopic dermatitis patient is unique. Each patient is unique. There is a component of shared medical decision-making that's going to be needed. You have to talk to your patient and understand where they're coming from and what their need is. We know that atopic dermatitis is a heterogeneous disease. And what we mean by that is the underlying molecular pathophysiology of AD is not the same in every subgroup of patient. So we do have to take into account that that variability, that heterogeneity, may mean that different treatments are going to be needed for different patients. For me, I think one of the most important things that I do is I try to get my patients on an advanced therapy early. I ask how much that atopic dermatitis is affecting their quality of life. That connection between skin disease, but also how it's affecting them in school, in the workplace, or in their social life. To me, that's really important, because it allows me to then communicate with the patient what I think can really be transformative for their atopic dermatitis treatment. I really focus in on the degree of itch disturbance and the degree of sleep disturbance. If any of the itch or sleep is high, I really have an honest discussion with my patients about advanced systemic therapies, which at the current moment involves two biologics, dupilumab and tralokinumab, and two oral systemic JAK inhibitors, upadacitinib and abrocitinib. And I review those four with my patients. And there's gonna be newer agents coming that's gonna make the discussion even more broad. However, at the moment, I have that discussion with my patient. I try to figure out what goals the patient wants from their treatment. Do they want really fast resolution of their itch and skin? In those cases, the JAK inhibitor might be a great option. Does the patient have concomitant asthma? In that case, dupilumab might be a great option. Has the patient tried a prior biologic or a prior agent and failed that agent? We know that if we know from the past 6-7 years of lots of patients with severe atopic dermatitis, moderate severe atopic dermatitis going on dupilumab, that not every patient responds perfectly to that medicine. So are they biologic naive? Or are they biologic experienced? Because if they've tried a biologic and not done as well as they wanted, an oral JAK inhibitor makes a lot of sense. I've also had patients that have failed dupilumab, have done very well with tralokinumab. So there are options out there. But in general, having that desire or understanding of what the patient wants in terms of skin clearance, rapidity of results, and how to get the patient back on their feet and back in their lives quickly, I think that understanding the JAK inhibitors and having a discussion with your patient about them is really important. And this comes down to also understanding that with JAK inhibitors, one of the things that we're really learning as more and more safety data comes out, the long-term 5-year safety data of upadacitinib and the long-term safety data of abrocitinib are both very reassuring. What we're learning is that there are very low rates of some of these adverse events that concern dermatologists initially at the launch of these medicines. Things like cardiovascular disease, things like clotting, things like cancer. What we're learning is that the rates of these more serious adverse events have been almost what I call rock bottom low, and they're staying low. They're not getting higher for these two JAK inhibitors. And this to me is incredibly reassuring to the patients and to the providers in dermatology, that the JAK inhibitors appear to only be getting safer as we get more long-term safety data. In fact, the most common adverse event that we've seen is herpes zoster. And we saw that in the upadacitinib data, but only less than 5% of the patients from that pool of patients had a shingles vaccine. So I think one of the more profound things dermatologists can do is encourage patients that are going to go on JAK inhibitors to get a shingles vaccine. This will cut down the single highest adverse event that's seen. So this is a great way, an easy way that we can intervene and change that side effect profile. But in the big scheme of things, the serious adverse events, the ones that really gave JAK inhibitors a boxed warning, are actually rock bottom low and staying low year after year. I think in dermatology, when the JAK inhibitors first came out, the boxed warning seems scary. And I've tried to reassure the community that just because a medicine has a boxed warning doesn't mean don't use the medicine. We have over 50 medicines in dermatology with boxed warnings, and we don't think twice about using them. Now, not thinking twice doesn't mean don't do due diligence, don't do lab monitoring, or don't do the things that you need to do to make sure the patient's safe. No, of course, we need to do lab monitoring. We need to do all the things to protect our patients. But I think the level of worry because of a simple box on a label has been blown out of proportion. As the safety of JAK inhibitors continues to develop and be reported, I think that we as a community are going to feel even more empowered to use these agents in atopic dermatitis and other diseases, but also to consider using them first line. The American Academy of Dermatology recently released new atopic dermatitis guidelines. And this is good because I think that the guidelines get a lot of things right. First and foremost, they gave strong recommendations for all four of the advanced systemic therapies that we have in the United States for atopic dermatitis: dupilumab, tralokinumab, upadacitinib, and abrocitinib. This is great. Strong recommendations. Why are there strong recommendations there? There are strong recommendations because they're highly efficacious and they're highly safe. They are pushing the boundary of efficacy and safety in our atopic dermatitis patients, and the guidelines reflect comfortability and just the transformative nature of all of these medicines in treating atopic dermatitis. What else did they get right, these guidelines? They downgraded traditional systemic immunosuppressants. I had the fortune of writing an article that looked and asked the question, are traditional immunosuppressants safer or less safe than systemic oral JAK inhibitors in atopic dermatitis? And our findings were really profound, because what they showed was that the JAK inhibitors, upadacitinib and abrocitinib, were safer on average compared to the traditional immunosuppressants with regard to the major adverse events of interest, cardiovascular, clotting, and cancer. This is really important because it suggested that the treatment pyramid, or the way in which we should use JAK inhibitors, needed to change. They needed to be before traditional immunosuppressants like methotrexate, cyclosporin, azathioprine. These traditional immunosuppressants, we used to, 10 years ago, use them in the moderate to severe atopic dermatitis patients and think that we are really good dermatologists when we use them. But what the data shows now, and what these new AD guidelines show, is that no, we need to actually position the JAK inhibitors far ahead of the traditional immunosuppressants. And I'm really glad that the guidelines downgraded these traditional immunosuppressants, because they are more dangerous and they are far less effective than what we have now. Lastly, the atopic dermatitis guidelines recommend against oral systemic corticosteroids. This could not have been a better decision. There's data out there that upwards of 75% of all moderate to severe atopic dermatitis patients get systemic oral corticosteroids. But yet, in our analysis of JAK inhibitor safety versus traditional immunosuppressants, we included systemic corticosteroids, and they had the highest rates of all the adverse events, these systemic steroids. And to make matters worse, oral prednisone does not have a boxed warning. I'm glad that the atopic dermatitis guidelines basically put an end to systemic corticosteroids in atopic dermatitis. It's the right move. We have too many other great advanced systemic therapies, whether it's biologic or the kind of groundbreaking JAK inhibitors. That's the right way to go.
And for more insightful Dermatology Times content, from articles to videos and podcasts, visit www.dermatologytimes.com and be sure to subscribe to our print publication and email newsletters. Have a great day.